any semblance of quality would be beneficial if you're the Pac-12. And if you need more numbers anyways, you need more teams that are on board, it would be beneficial. So no, it's not about hoops. I'm not saying it is. It's never been about hoops. But if there's ever been a time to strike, now would be the time. Hello and welcome. It's Always College Football. It's a Friday edition. And we're just one day away from April Fool's Day, so we're going to have some fun with today's edition of the show. We have a lot that we need to get to. We're going to get into a few things. San Diego State. You're going to say, Greg, why are we going to focus so much attention on San Diego State today? Because San Diego State is potentially a key cog in what might be another round of Pac-12 expansion. And doesn't mean the Big 12 might actually get involved. We'll talk about them being in the Final Four and why it might ultimately lead to a new look in college football. But that's not the only thing that we're going to discuss. We're going to dive in to some heartbreaking moments when your team basically fooled you into thinking, hey, you're going to be great. You're going to be awesome. This game's going to go great. This game is a win. Only to see your heart ripped out and you're left kind of crying there at the end of the game in defeat and or at the end of the season, recognizing that maybe we just weren't that good after all. And then finally, we have a terrific mailbag question from one of our listeners asking us about the specifics of getting rid of divisions in college football and how that ultimately might have a significant impact on some teams that would be considered middle of the road, maybe slightly upper tier, but not the highest tier in their respective conferences. So we got a lot that we need to get to, but let's kick things off out west with a little Final Four discussion. You're going to say, Greg, what are you talking about? Bear with me. Let's talk about it. Some people are saying, and I'm not one saying it, but there are experts that are very familiar with the Pac-12, that are very familiar with a constant shifting in the landscape of college athletics. There are experts out there that have been watching this March Madness tournament very closely. And one of the biggest breakthroughs in March Madness has been the fact that San Diego State, a Mountain West team there in Southern California, has won four consecutive games and punched their ticket to their first ever Final Four. You're going to say, Greg, why does this matter? Why do I care? That's college basketball. I get it. Believe me, I'm not telling you you should care, but if you do have a vague interest in conference realignment, this is a story that you need to be paying attention to. You need to say, Greg, well, what about FAU? Are we knocking down the door to make sure that FAU gets added to the ACC? Are we knocking down the door to make sure that UConn gets readmitted into the American? Like, no, we're not doing any of those things. So why do we care about San Diego State? Because UConn and FAU, I might add, are in parts of the country that are remarkably accounted for as it relates to college sports. Southern California, however, not so much. And the Pac-12 right now, say what you want about where they currently stand in their media rights negotiation. The Pac-12 right now is at a bit of a crossroads. Now, they are trying to figure out, who are we going to go with? Are we going to go with ESPN? Are we going to go with the streaming service, Apple, Amazon, what have you? All of us are wondering the exact same question. I can't answer it. But I can tell you this. Not having arguably the most densely populated part of your entire footprint accounted for, not having Los Angeles in the Pac-12, not having Southern California in the Pac-12 is something that would be a little bit problematic if I'm going to go to the table in a rights negotiation and say, Greg, LA and San Diego are a long way away. I get that, but right now, USC and UCLA are en route to the Big Ten. It's done. They're going. It's over. Who's your Southern California presence? San Diego State's about the only team that you could possibly justify. And a lot of people are going to say, well, San Diego State hoops, should it matter? Do basketball programs really matter when it comes to realignment? The answer in most cases is no. People aren't jumping over tables to try to add teams to their conference because of how good they are in basketball. There's long been speculation about, well, Gonzaga is going to join the Pac-12, or maybe Gonzaga is going to join the Big 12. Well, why hasn't it happened yet? If we're so concerned about hoops and we're so concerned about realignment to account for hoops, what's Gonzaga doing still playing in the West Coast Conference? Last I checked, they're not getting an invitation as of right now. Now, ultimately, they might, because they might have no choice. But if you look at San Diego State, they're a little bit different. Now, people are going to say, well, San Diego State, hey, getting to the Final Four is remarkable. But if you look at what San Diego State's accomplished in their history as a football program, I actually think they'd be a welcome addition. Tell me the Pac-12 is going to have open conversations about the SMU Mustangs and not consider the possibility of adding San Diego State. San Diego State, a team that's won, I don't know, 21 conference titles, team that's had six division titles since being in the Mountain West. And how about this? A team that should have, whether you say you agree with me or not, but should have probably had a Heisman Trophy winner in Marshall Faulk in the early 90s. San Diego State's got a long story tradition of playing really good football. So you could tell me, hey, this Final Four run, not a big deal. Yeah, well, it is, because the Pac-12, last I checked, not represented in the Final Four. The Pac-12, outside of UCLA in recent years, has been really hit or miss when it comes to college hoop. Pac-12, as documented for quite a while, has been really hit or miss as it relates to college football. And with your bell cow SC leaving, yeah, I think Washington's in good shape. Yeah, I think Oregon's great. I'm cautiously optimistic about Colorado and Arizona State and all these other teams. I'm good with it. I respect the league. I love the league. I'm from Los Angeles, for crying out loud. I respect the league. But you cannot turn up your nose at San Diego State. You cannot turn up your nose at Fresno State. You need to strongly consider welcoming SMU into the Pac-12. Why? Because there's strength in numbers. And people will say, well, no, you need eyeballs. You need brands. Not when you're on the verge of potentially getting poached. You need numbers. And adding a San Diego State, adding a Fresno, talking to a UNLV, adding an SMU, looking at a Colorado State, looking at a Boise State. I'm not suggesting you extend invitations to all those teams. No, I'm not saying that at all. But it needs to be on the table. And it should be accelerated, given the fact that San Diego State is teeing it up tomorrow for an opportunity to potentially cut down the nets in men's basketball, which is the second biggest sport in all of college athletics. So, as a call to action, make something happen, Pac-12. Make a move. It has to be done. San Diego State, if they win tomorrow, just go ahead and extend the invitation and consider it a Pac-12 champion before Monday night's championship game. That's what I'd do. I'd capture the moment and try to steal something from the Mountain West. Even if I can't get any of the money, I still want a piece of it. If I'm Mike Oresko, I'm doing a victory lap right now about FAU getting to the Final Four. Why? Because they're a future member of the American Athletic Conference. If I'm Mike Oresko, I'm doing a victory lap because of the performance of future members North Texas and UAB because of their performance in the NIT. Yeah, I know they're Conference USA members right now, but I kind of want to take credit for it because guess what? They're a future member. Now, I think right now, man, this whole way, they're not a big enough brand. That stuff needs to go by the wayside. You need quality. And if you can get some quality in hoops, take it. If you can get some quality in football, take it. Because right now the Pac-12 is on life support. And they need to throw a lifeline to a program that would be mutually beneficial for them to align for 2024, 25, and well into the future.
All right, McElroy, then how come San Diego State isn't out there politicking for it? How come Marshall Faulk isn't out there saying, let us join? You know, like you would think that if they want to take this step forward, that they'd be all in on this. And hey, look at Pac-12. Like, we see nothing about this besides a couple people talking about it. Hey, this should be good for you. Where is San Diego State in this? How come they're not out there saying, hey, look at us. Look what we can bring. Where are they?
Let me ask you a question. When you were pursuing your wife, were you desperately knocking on her door every day? Were you constantly blowing her up with text messages or DMs? Is that how you pursue someone? Is that how you pursue an opportunity? I don't think so. I think you play a little hard to get. I'm not saying that I've batted a thousand or anything.
What are the options for San Diego State? Stay in the Mountain West, you know, kind of, hey, go through there or move up to what is considered the Power Five, because it's not about basketball. Basketball doesn't bring in any money. You know, if it did, then Maryland wouldn't have left for the Big Ten.
It does bring in money.
This has to be them pointing out everything.
It does bring in money, but it does not bring as much money in as college football. Even North Carolina, Kansas, even those football programs bring in more than their basketball program. Duke, like all that stuff. Football is more valuable. There's no denying that football is more valuable, but any semblance of quality would be beneficial if you're the Pac-12. And if you need more numbers anyways, you need more teams that are on board, it would be beneficial. So no, it's not about hoops. I'm not saying it is. It's never been about hoops. But if there's ever been a time to strike, now would be the time. Because of the recency bias that is centering around San Diego State right now and the quality that they've put on the field the last few years. And the fact that you have departures that are leaving the footprint here in the next 24 months. It just makes too much sense. And I'm not saying that, hey, the San Diego State's now going to carry the Pac-12. No, not at all. But I do think that it would be a valuable move in the court of public opinion as opposed to sitting on your hands. At least it makes it look or gives off the impression that, hey, man, we're out trying to do something to strengthen our league. Because right now, we're all looking at George Kliavkov and we're saying, all right, where's the media rights deal? What are you doing? We're all looking at the Big 12, assuming, hey, Big 12 is about to go start poaching teams. Like, we see the headlines, hey, we are unified. Pac-12 is unified. We're going to actually make more money than the Big 12 in our new rights deal. Fine, the messaging is great. Where's the action? So I think that it's going to be very interesting to watch, because the people that are winning way more than me say that what San Diego State's done in the last 3 weeks is massive as it relates to the potential of them being extended invitation down the road to either not just the Pac-12, but potentially even the Big 12 as well a couple of years from now.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, sometimes we get a question in our mailbag that's so good we feel like it needs to stand alone. So that's exactly what we got this time around. It was so good, we felt like it needed a segment of its own. So we're going to break it down from every possible angle. Koobs, tell us a little bit more about it.
All right, so Ben in Minnesota posed a question here. It says, Greg, with the Big Ten doing away with divisions in 2024, do you feel as if the 2023 season is the last chance Minnesota has at playing for a Big Ten title for the foreseeable future? What do you think the Big Ten is going to look like once divisions are eliminated?
Well, it's a phenomenal question. And it's one, if you look at just how all of these conferences have been structured, the Big Ten originally tried legends and leaders, right? To try to balance out, because geographically you couldn't balance it out. It wasn't going to happen, because eventually they got to the geographical divisions because legends and leaders was so ridiculous that you just had to abandon that immediately. So they decided to go east versus west. And unfortunately, for those that are in the east, it became incredibly difficult. Unfortunately, I'm looking at you, Maryland. I'm looking at you, Rutgers. I'm looking at you to a certain extent, Michigan State, and obviously Indiana. You mention it, you break it down east versus west. You have really three traditional and historically significant programs in Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. Michigan State has been very significant in the last two, maybe three decades or whatnot, but for the most part, over the course of time, they would be number four in the division. Either way, think about how good Michigan State is and how difficult it would be to navigate that path on a year-in, year-out basis. Why do you think they've fallen on occasional hard times? Because anybody would. If you had to run up against the brick wall that is Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State for the more reasonable past. On the other side of the equation, you look at the Big Ten West. The Big Ten West has not fared well in the Big Ten championship game. And if you look at the Big Ten West teams, yeah, they've pulled some upsets. I mean, we can think of a handful of games in which, you know, an Illinois team has given a Michigan team all they want. A Purdue team has knocked off Ohio State. An Iowa team has knocked off Ohio State. I can think of a handful of games like that. Penn State went to Minnesota and lost. Remember, there have been a bunch of games where the Big Ten West has beaten Big Ten East teams in the regular season. But when it comes down to a one-game season, it hasn't always materialized. The Big Ten West is not alone. Minnesota, specifically to Rob's question, is not alone. If you look at the Big Ten East versus the SEC East versus the SEC West for a period of about, 10 years? From 2008 until 2017, the SEC West dominated every single year. Feel like when you look at how things have kind of sorted themselves out, in the Pac-12 abandoned divisions, Last year, you get an SC team against a Utah team. Well, goodness gracious, look at how many great years Arizona State has had. Look at how many great years Stanford has had. And when it was the Pac-12 North versus the Pac-12 South, it was cyclical, but it was certainly most years not necessarily balanced. I think if you're a middle-of-the-pack team in your conference as a whole, and you look just right down the list, there might be a year or two where you cycle up, you have a bunch of veterans, maybe you have a difference maker at quarterback, and you knock off a few teams en route to an upset, which leads you to eventually getting to the conference championship game. It could happen. I'm never going to say never, ever. Because if you look at, for instance, you look at all the different games that have been played in the Big 12, for example, they used to have divisions for a really long time. You had the North against the South. Well, the South, because they had Oklahoma and Texas, South won it most of the time. Now, there were examples of Kansas State winning it. There were examples of Nebraska winning it. There were examples of the Northern teams winning it every once in a while. But the South, for the most part, dominated the Big 12 when they had their divisions. Either way, I think as you move forward, it's going to be more difficult, far more difficult, to win a conference championship than it is to get in the college football playoff. So if you're a team like Minnesota, you're going to sit there and say, hang on a second, how does that make sense? Because we're going to a 12-team playoff, and that's going to happen sooner than later. We're going to be there in, two seasons. So it's going to be here before you know it. And things will look very different. But do you think it's likely that Minnesota, using them as an example, because that's where the question came from, you just answer it for me. I think every job in the Big Ten West got more difficult. and every job in the Big Ten East got easier. For instance, Maryland became significantly easier. Wisconsin became significantly more difficult. Doesn't mean it's not still a great job. Just means your job got tougher because now your path to a conference championship no longer goes through Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota. Now your path to a conference championship actually goes through Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and any of the aforementioned teams that might have been in your way in the past. Used to be when the Big Ten West was not great. There have been years where they really weren't great. It was the lesser of many evils. That's who got to the conference championship game. Same thing for a long time with the SEC East. I saw a 9-3 SEC champion get there in the past with Florida, and I believe Treon Harris was the starting quarterback, and they got destroyed back in like 2016. I saw a Missouri team who really wasn't very good, but found their way into the SEC championship game because they were the lesser of many evils. That time, Georgia was down. Florida was very inconsistent. Tennessee was down. It was a weird time in the SEC East, and now things have flipped. Look at the LSU Tigers last year. They get to the SEC championship game, but they really weren't great. They were 9-3, and they had just lost the week before to a 4-8 Texas A&M team, or a 5-7 Texas A&M team. So to answer your question in a real long, poetic sort of way, if you're a team that has been on the weaker side of your conference when the divisions were geographic, buckle up. Because I really think that if your focus is on conference championships, that's probably going to be a difficult goal to attain. Yes, like I said, maybe every once in a while, every two or three, maybe every three or four, every 4 or 5 years, you rally up, you pull off a couple upsets, and then you get it to a conference championship setting. That could happen. I'm never going to say it can't, but it's less likely that that happens than it is you going, say, 10-2, 9-3, and finding your way as a 12 seed in the college football playoff. So if I were a team like Minnesota, if I were a team like South Carolina, if I were a team like Missouri, if I were a team like, say, Utah, even though Utah has gotten to several conference championship games and will likely get to several more, my focus would be on making the college football playoff as an at-large team, not necessarily having to climb over the giants that are Ohio State, that are Michigan, that are Alabama, that are Georgia, and route to a conference title. The focus should be on the playoff game and get into the playoff and not as much on the conference title, which is weird because it's completely counterintuitive to everything we've been taught over the last 30 plus years since conference championship games were instituted in the early 90s. It's completely the opposite of what we've grown up with, but it's something we need to get comfortable with because I think getting to the playoffs are going to be easier than winning a conference title.
So let me ask you on a follow-up on that. Do you see conference championship games going away? I know they are big money for the school, the conferences, and it helps determine the champion, but is it ever going to be detrimental to play in them? If you lose, you could be, you know, you go from a bye to playing in the first round. You ever see them going away?
No, because one, they're far too lucrative. Crazy money, and you don't have to share it. You keep it in-house. What is the conference championship game worth for the Big Ten? I don't know. You get Michigan and Ohio State, or you get Ohio State USC. I mean, you're talking about a 12, 13, 14 million viewer game. And there's no telling what kind of value you could put on that. And you don't have to share it with anyone. No, they're not going away for that reason. But I do think that there's one aspect of the conference championship games that are very important. You just said you could go from having a first round bye to playing in the first round game. Well, that's the reward of winning the conference championship. There's still incentive to play in the conference championship. There's still a reward if you are victorious in the conference championship game, and that's a first round bye, and the possibility, I'm hoping, of hosting a home playoff game. Now, there's been scuttlebutt about the second round of the playoffs being at bowl sites. Maybe that happens. Maybe that doesn't. I personally would like to see the second round games on campus and then the semifinal games and championship. I'd like to see those in the New Year's Six venues or the championship venues, what have you. But I like the idea of the first round and the second round being on campus in a hostile environment. And if you win your conference, that's the only way you can host a college football playoff game. So I would like to incentivize people playing in the playoff, playing in their championship game, winning their championship game, because the reward at the end could be a home playoff game and potentially a bye as well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, in honor of April Fool's Day, which is coming up tomorrow, we figured we'd take a couple moments to look at some foolish moments in college football, meaning we were fools to believe it was going to go a certain way, only to be surprised at the very end. Now, I can get you through a list, and we can just go line by line by line by line of all these different remarkable outcomes, all these crazy and chaotic finishes. But why would I do that and just list them off? Let's have a listen by starting with all those crazy people that actually thought Michigan was going to beat Colorado back in 1994.
Let it go. He's got three people down there. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Touchdown. Caught by Westbrook for a touchdown! Incredible!
Or maybe the Bluegrass Miracle, one that we just recently talked about here on Always College Football.
Randall, as time expires, lets it fly.
Oh my goodness! Touchdown LSU! They win the game! Sequence of events. LSU will go home with the victory.
And even if you don't believe that those things can happen nowadays in college football, because that was the chaotic 90s, that was a wild time in the early 2000s, those things would never happen in the 2020s, well, think again, because you probably thought that, you know, Troy was going to beat Appalachian State last year, only to see this come to fruition right before the bell.
Here's Bryce rolling out. Time to heave it deep. Throws it shy of the goal line, and that ball is tipped around and caught.
Wow!
Caught! Oh, that's a touchdown!
Wow!
Mountaineers win it! Mountaineers
win it!
Are you kidding me?
Wow. And a reminder, that was actually Troy's final loss of the year. They went on a run and never lost since. So Troy last year, 12-2, one Hail Mary loss, one loss to Ole Miss in the first game of the year where they actually played him pretty dang well. We can also look at certain ways where we were kind of high on a team coming into a season. People thinking, hey, man, this is going to be the year. Then you could just tell the whole season. It's like, man, they are cooking. This team, nobody's beaten them. Nobody's touching them. Nobody's beating them. They're going to go the distance. Like in 2011, when the Oklahoma State Cowboys, all they had to do was just go to little old Ames on November 18th, 2011. They were a 4-touchdown favorite. How hard could it be? Look at Iowa State at that point. Not great. Not great at all. But when you look at it, it was pretty wild to see that final play in overtime, losing 37-31 and eventually destroying their chance of playing LSU for the championship there in New Orleans. Of course, Alabama got in as a result of Oklahoma State's loss. A lot of people upset because Alabama had already played LSU and people thought Oklahoma State deserved a chance, all this other stuff. It was chaos. And you actually think that Oklahoma State team, whether you're a fan of the playoff or not a fan of the playoff, I think that Oklahoma State team is what accelerated the process to implement the playoff just a couple years later. What about in 2007? You want to talk about a 180? You have a team that plays a certain way in the first half of the season, and then they flip it around and things don't necessarily go as planned. This was in 2007. And all I need to do is just tell you about the backyard brawl. Do I really need to go much further? West Virginia, everything was aligned for them. Remember, 2007 was a wacky season. I mean, you look at just how inconsistent teams were. LSU was in the mix. You have Ohio State that was in the mix. All these other teams that were in the mix to potentially win a national championship, but they all just kept falling flat on their face as well. You look at West Virginia, all they had to do was just take care of business against a 4-7 Pitt team at home in December, and they would have played Ohio State for the national championship. But an all-time defensive performance led to them losing 13-7, and since that moment, West Virginia has not been anywhere near as consistent. They've had plenty of New Year's Six bowl games. Had plenty of New Year's Six Bowl victories, but they have not sniffed a national championship. That was an insane game. And when you think about, go back and look at that 2007 West Virginia team. The fact that they were held to 7 points in that game will blow your mind. So either way, pretty wild thinking that, man, we're on our way. No, country roads, not this time. There's also been plenty of specific games, I might add, where you think things are absolutely finished. It's done. Game, set, and match. Like when Michigan State came back against Northwestern October 21st, 2006. They came back from 35 points down. Or how about just a few years ago, UCLA down huge to Texas A&M on September 3rd, 2017, all of us sitting there at halftime saying, man, keep an eye on Texas A&M. This team is legit. 34 points up, and this thing is over. They are embarrassing the Bruins. Well, those were all erased really quickly. So plenty of fooled you moments, whether it be in the seasons, individual plays, or remarkable comebacks that have scattered their way throughout college football in the last 20-something years. So plenty more of those to come from. Don't get fooled. Don't get fooled on April Fool's Day. That's all I have
Macro,
to say.
Hold on. What is your favorite? What moment have you been fooled on? Like, what's your, whether you're playing or watching, what's your fooled you moment? Like, where you thought a team was going to win or you thought your team was going to win. Do you have one?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a game that I was playing in was a fairly significant one. We had a huge lead against Auburn in 2010. Which has now been more formally coined the comeback. That would have been a good example of one that was somewhat surprising to me. Felt like we were in complete cruise control, only to fall and come up just a little bit short. So that would probably be my least favorite moment. I'm sure I could probably think of a handful that would be my favorite moments. But you know, for now, we'll just keep it at least favorite just to keep that fire burning. You know, we'll just keep it there, at least for the moment. But I would say Bush push game was probably one, because if you look at just how that game went, a lot of people remember the QB sneak there at the very end, but it was actually a fourth down and 20 plus conversion that kept that drive alive, which was probably one of the more remarkable conversions you've ever seen. So that would have been one of significance. Even later that year, USC against Texas, I thought for sure SC was going to walk the dog. I'd seen that Texas team and they were good and Vince Young was special, but it was really Vince Young against what was at that time a superhuman USC football team. People leading up to that game saying, hey, is this one of the best ever? Is this one of the best ever to do it? Is this one of the best teams of all time? And sure enough, it wasn't to be that night as Vince Young stole it there at the very end of the front right pylon. So those would be a few that would stand out to me for sure. But goodness, I mean, it's college football. You're going to get fooled every week. That's the why it's the best. So in honor of April Fool's Day, felt like we needed to pull out a couple of fooled you moments when you thought a specific outcome was going to occur, only to be fooled and shocked at how it didn't go the way you thought it was going to go. Look, next week we have a great week in store for you. We're going to get to some mid-spring highlights, some things we need to get to, give you some updates, some position battles, some competition, some big picture storylines. You also have some spring games that are going to be coming up here in the next couple weeks that we got to start to preview, because we've done our basic spring previews, but we got to dive a little bit deeper, especially here in the next 3 to 4 weeks. For all of us here at Always College Football, for Jack Foster and Mark Kubiak, I'm Greg McElroy. Hope you have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.